Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yo, son!
One app is life.
It's not the one you should be underestimating.
Get it out!
Godzilla, King Kong, Loch Ness.
We rap nerd now here, right?
Like, I can tell you were a nerd.
It's primal. And that's raw. Carhartt girl.
Speaking of sneaky big tits,
are you out there fucking?
I'm doing that.
Years ago, I bought a millionaire Griffin. This was years ago, bro. Years ago.
Cypher Sounds. Peter Rosenberg. One app is life.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
And DJ Enough is here.
I'm here, y'all. This is crazy.
The heavy hitter is here. Now, Enough reminded me, Saif, you and I don't remember anything about our history. We had Enough on an episode, on a live episode.
On a live episode?
Yeah, we were in Brooklyn, right?
Which one? The Flex one?
Not the Flex. Was it the Flex one?
I think it was the Flex one.
Like, did we do a mini interview? Like, did we interview you first?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I was in the
crowd.
What
was the
other
live
one? There was one I was in the crowd and one I was actually there.
We only did a live one in Brooklyn once with Flex. Then we did the live one at that spot? Highline.
DJ Enough One app. Let's see.
You're searching it. Look at the research we have on this.
It says we have a crack staff. One app at Masters of Ceremony. He was on with us there.
Oh, yes. Yes.
He came on at the Masters of Ceremony concert at the Barclays Center.
Ah.
Which was a big day.
Yeah,
but that's... No, you got overshadowed, E.
Yeah, we had Rakim.
We had Rakim Allah.
Everlast, Farside.
Lost the Everlast episode.
That's where Capone's boy called you the Jew N-word.
That's correct. Anyways, guys, I want to apologize in advance for anything that gets fucked up about this episode. I see recording and levels. At the very least, we'll have a totally fine audio podcast. God willing, between the crack staff of myself, Emilio, and the great Billy June, we got these cameras operating well enough. But E, you're first, not because we want you to be a guinea pig of our in-person studio interviews, but because we just been talking recently about, like, you might be one of the most untapped into treasure troves of hip-hop history.
True, because we, you know, I don't work at High 97 anymore.
Disgrace.
I was disgracefully escorted out of the building, but we work with you and you're a friend, so sometimes you forget how deep your friends go into the culture and the history, you know what I mean?
And E, yours is a crazy story.
I've had some fun.
We have to start at the very beginning.
All right, let's go for it.
Born on the LES?
No, born in Harlem.
Born in Harlem.
Harlem. I heard that.
My parents lived and resided and dated in Lower East Side, so I was made in Lower East Side.
You were made in Lower East Side.
But raised predominantly in Brooklyn.
Well, wow.
Does that make sense?
What street were you conceived on? Like Kenmare? Yeah. What do you think?
Probably 4th Street and Avenue 4th, C.
Avenue C, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Alphabet City.
Yeah.
Okay.
100%.
And then when did they move to
Brooklyn?
To Brooklyn, yeah.
1979.
You consider yourself a Brooklynite.
You know why? Because it took me a long time to kind of figure this out. But wherever you kind of like went to junior high school and high school,
yeah,
it's kind of like where you kind of like...
No, I think even a little before that.
Yeah, but I did elementary school, junior high school, and college all in Brooklyn.
Yeah, you're a Brooklynite.
What part of Brooklyn?
Flatbush.
Flatbush, Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And this is 79. So we're talking about, we always hear about like hip hop in the Bronx in 79.
Right.
And what was the scene? What was your first exposure to hip hop in Brooklyn in the early 80s?
What do you think? He was in his 20s?
He's like five.
Oh, he's young.
No, he was
man.
Seven. What were you, six, 7 years
young,
old?
I was young, man. I was probably like no, eight. Seven,
what was
eight.
The scene? Describe
no. No, what was the, what were the clubs like?
Yeah, I just finished doing like an interview with Clark and Kid Capri, and we were talking about, they were talking about the Kool Herc party and like, what was it like back in those days? And I was like, guys, I was probably two. You know, like, I'm like, there's no way. I wasn't outside back then. And I wasn't outside in 79 either.
You weren't outside yet?
No. I was listening to radio shows like WHBI 105.9. I was listening to the Zulu Beat Show. I was listening to Awesome 2, Teddy Ted.
So where that's mid-80s.
That's the early 80s for me. Yeah, like 82, 83, 84. Somewhere around that time. So listening to Public Enemy for the first time, I was like, what the hell is this? I was like, I put this face on like a fear. Like I said, is this really happening? And I'm listening to them rap like, oh my God, the world's going to be over. These guys are talking some ish I've never.
Welcome to the terror.
And this is literally like 1-2 in the morning on a school night. All right. So, you know, I'm 12, 13, if that, listening to this music at 2 in the morning. There's no headphones, no smartphone, Spotify or Apple Music. I'm listening from my dad's stereo system at 1 a.m. as low as possible.
As low as you can,
because there's no headphones either.
And at what age did you take like a more serious interest in the music thing? Like, nah, I'm really into this.
It wasn't until after like the breakdancing era for me. There was a crew called Nasty With Rock out of Flatbush, and they were dope.
Nasty With Rock?
Yeah, they used to battle like guys from Break Till Dawn out of Coney Island. That was their like arch nemesis group.
Okay.
But I was the guy who kind of like carried the radio back then.
Somebody had to.
I was the radio dude. I was a little chubby guy. Plus, when they started doing windmills and stuff, I was like, that's not for me.
I can hold the radio though.
I'm going to
hold the
radio with it.
No, you know what? He was one short of the guy who was sticking the plug into the lamppost.
Yeah, there you go.
That was more technical.
That's it.
But he was holding the radio.
I was holding the radio.
Important job, man.
I was the
guy. By the way, don't knock it.
By the way, it is the DJ job.
Yeah.
I mean, you were essentially being the DJ. You're
and back in those days, I would make pause tapes. I would take the greatest records from the radio and I would just record them, and I would try to make pause tapes to extend the breaks on these damn mixes or whatever. And that's what actually came out to be the guy's workout when it was like breakdancing in the field.
You would end up making
I would make the music and the cassettes back in those days.
Like, you ain't hip hop like that. You never did that. You weren't pause tape mixing for
B-Boys.
That was
a real deal for me. That was everything.
What was your name at that point?
The Real Truth? EWOP.
It's not the worst we've heard.
EWOP. So like, remember how Doo-Wop had his name, Doo-Wop?
Yeah.
It was EWOP.
That's not a bad name, because your name is Ephraim. Yeah. So E is always prominent in your name. Any nickname is going to have
and
E
WAP
in it.
Was a thing back in the day.
It was a good one.
The WAP was a thing.
So E, when did you get turntables?
I want to say 1985.
Ooh. What were these?
All right, my first turntable was an upright turntable system that I got as a birthday gift. And I was happy, but I really wasn't happy.
Right. It wasn't what you wanted.
Because it wasn't a Technique 1200.
The techniques were already the thing in 85, huh?
It was just starting to be a real thing. It was becoming a thing, but I remember seeing it on the album or single cover of the Malcolm McLaren and the world famous Supreme Team show.
The Double Dutch single or?
Well, one of the singles had the vinyl, right?
Yeah.
And the turntable, and I was like, what the hell? And I looked at it because I had a Technique SL1 and a B2. And I was a straight arm, and one was a S arm.
For the record, I just want to let you know right now, if you're out there listening and you never DJed with unmatching turntables, you're not a real DJ.
Right, that's what it was.
Well, I had a turntable, and then like a little, like you said, like a little stereo system.
Right.
I wish I would have kept it. It had like two tape decks,
that's it.
A radio,
that's the same exact thing
and
I had.
A turntable on top.
That's the same exact thing I had.
And I used to play the record on there, and then scratch with the other better turntable.
I bet you our parents bought it from the same spot. Yo, maybe the Wiz.
I had to be the Wiz.
I wish I kept that, man.
And see, I'm so modern era relative to you geezers that my move was I had I had the belt drive turntable and my parents' CD player.
Yeah,
the stereo CD component.
There you go.
Then eventually I got One Techniques And it was a long time where I was just finding ways to rock off one.
Me too.
And then like a year later, I was able to get the second one.
Me too.
So do you remember what records you were buying when you were initially buying
records? My first record I ever bought on vinyl was probably Set It Off by Strafe. It was a club classic.
Yeah.
And then back in those days, anything that was on Profile, Tommy Boy, or Def Jam. Because I mean that. When I went into the store, when you saw the Def Jam wall or the Tommy Boy wall, you knew, or the Profile wall, you was like, anything on those labels are official. Anything.
Yeah.
And then back in those days, it was kind of proven. Like, anything on Tommy Boy was official. Profile official.
He got home.
Def Jam official.
He got home with that Orange Juice Jones record.
What? I saw you and him walking in the rain. Absolutely, brother.
And then a lot of people may not remember this if you're not a DJ nerd. Like, I'll just be honest. There are a lot of Tommy Boy and Profile records from the early, mid 80s that, like, I see them but don't know what they are.
Yeah.
Like, they're like dance records and shit that I don't.
Yeah.
Like, they were club records.
Yeah.
That, like, I would see, but I didn't really know.
Yeah. Like C Bank or something like that. Yeah, like that was, those type of records.
On Next Plateau. Yep.
What age were you? Do you remember the age when you first rocked a party in any way?
My first party, I can tell you the first party. My first party was these guys called the Love Brothers. The Love Brothers were my homeboy from Brooklyn. And I had to do an interview to DJ this club for them. This guy named Jose goes, yo, I love this mix you do with After Seven and Sucker MCs. Can you do that mix over for my brothers? So I was like, all right, cool. So I'm playing Can't Stop. And I'm playing Suck MCs underneath like a nice blend. And I'm cutting and scratching. I go into Suck MCs and they fell in love with the mix. And that's how
I heard it on a tape
or a cassette. I recorded it from my crib, literally right. Live. And then I gave it to them on a cassette. He got a phone call. Yo, we're going to start our party. We're doing our party with this kid named Tuffy. Tuffy helps Ralph McDaniels on Video Music Box. He's a host.
Yeah.
He's kind of a big deal. So then we called the night Tuffy's Candy Store. It was the first Sunday night party way before Flex even started his tunnel parties. Way before.
We're talking, so this is like,
this is 91, maybe something like 90s, that. Early 90s, right? And then maybe after that run, I think the Jessica and Flex started the tunnel. But we were
Where
the first
up.
It was on Club Negril on 46th Street and Broadway, right off of Broadway. It was an African club. But it was a dope spot. And it was right across the street from the California Club.
And how old were you?
I'm probably in my early 20s, if I'm not mistaken.
And during the teenage years?
But that sounds like a big party.
Yeah,
because it was a huge party.
No, but you wasn't doing like parties as a teenager? Like
yeah,
school? Like,
yeah, I was. So but that was like those little house parties I was doing.
Yeah. Right.
That's when I was still local.
Right, right.
I was still like Queen Latifah says in Juice. You're just local. I was definitely local. So I was doing like, My big to-do party back when I was local was I did a high school party. And this was for my stepsister at the time. Her name was Samantha. It was her sweet 16. And her father was the super of the basement that I lived in. So we have access to the whole entire building on Brooklyn, right? But I invited everybody from Canarsie High School, Midwood High School, Erasmus High School, Edward R. Murrow High School, Lincoln High School.
Sounds like murder.
Before you knew it, we no, had...
This sounds like a podcast that white girls would listen to about true crime.
No, but everybody and their mother from Brooklyn came. It was a real big to-do. Cops came. They shut the party down.
Wow.
It was one of those. Like, what are y'all doing?
In an apartment building?
In the basement.
Wow, like where the garbage chute is.
You go through the garbage and then you end up in the area where it's just literally a big...
Yeah, that's some New York shit right there.
And we had the boom, boom, bap speakers and it was really a party.
Did you grow up around any other notable hip-hop people? Because in Brooklyn in that time, I feel like there's a chance.
There was some.
Like who? Tell us.
Like the block parties we would go to were like Clark Kent was DJing at these block parties.
Okay.
I would go to this guy named Professor Paul's house and he was like a legendary Flatbush DJ. Like he was the guy. He had pink turntables. We used to call them Pink Panthers.
Wow.
But Hitman Howie T
would record
and some DJ sessions at his crib. And I also went to school with Chub Rock.
See,
so Chub Rock.
You hear me? Yeah.
So Chub Rock would have that voice. Hey bro, how you doing, bro? Like he would talk like weird. Like I felt like I felt like he was talking from London or something.
I never even thought about that, what voice is Chub Rock doing?
I don't know, but that's how he talked for real. And he used to always wear trench coats in junior high.
By the way, I very much want Chub Rock on this podcast.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Wait, what school was that?
I went to Midwood High. No, junior high school, Huddy. HUDDE. And then back in those days, there was, I forgot his name, Kurt something. Kurt was famous too, but he used to run with like Supercat and those guys from like Brooklyn and Queens and Long Island, like the reggae dance hall vibes, because we were in Flatbush. It was a very big thing for our neighborhood and community. Like me coming out the Lower East Side, leaving Manhattan, going to Brooklyn, it was culture shock for the first time.
Yeah.
So I grew up with Jews, Irish people, and Puerto Ricans in Lower East Side. That's, right? And then I go to Brooklyn, it's like Jamaicans, Guyanese, Haitian, and Trinidadian. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? It was a real culture shock for me. So junior high school, I'm raised with these West Indians. But then it did actually help because it was my first like real introduction to like Caribbean flavor music. Mm-hmm. So I got the edge on everybody else in the city. So when I would come to the city to do my thing, Red Alert would be like, yo, do your reggae thing, bro.
Really?
Yeah, because Red's from Harlem, so they kind of dipped and dabbed into reggae music, but not as deep as that.
Because like if you Red Alert's doing a party and there's a lot of people from Brooklyn there,
right?
They tend to be at least of West Indian descent, so they more used to wanting to hear some reggae music mixed in. But like 100%. that's how I got my name 100%. With Flex, because 100%. Flex didn't want to play reggae.
Well, I was about to say, wow, what a through line between the two of you.
Yeah.
Puerto Ricans who were known for playing a mean dance hall. Wow.
It's always had respect. It's always like a good break. Max Glazier and them guys.
Like a good break for a DJ. Go ahead, play like 20, 30 minutes of reggae. I'll be right back.
Smoke blood.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's very cool. So there were a good amount of hip hop people around the way.
Yeah, around the way a little bit. Yep.
And how big did the party at Negril get? It started jumping on.
So the first 3 weeks, nobody shows up. I'm $900 in the hole owed to me, because my first night DJing, it was going to be $300. Yeah. And I was like, $300 to DJ? I'll do it for fucking free.
But
I took the $300 and I was excited. I didn't get the $300 for like almost a month later. But my point was this. This is to tell you the timeline exactly.
Okay.
The Red Zone was popping on Thursdays. And Flex used to do guest spots on Thursday at the Red Zone.
I've heard Flex shout out Red Zone before.
P-Rock, Premier, Clark Kent were also DJs in rotation. And even Kid Capri at the time. Butt Naked Tim Dog was the host.
Wow.
Okay, you know who that is? Butt Naked Tim Dog?
I just know the name.
He used to roll around Uptown MCA Records around. He was down with like Diddy
Heavy
and a bunch of Heavy D and those people. Yeah. So he was kind of the host and he would take his shirt off and jump on stage.
Hence the butt naked part.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, so that was
it's not just a clever name.
So I went to Tuffy and some of the guys said, listen, why don't we just go to the hottest party in New York City at the time? And why don't we just give out some free complimentary tickets? Because even if we don't make no money at the door, but if we have people at the venue, they'll be drinking. So at least, okay, we won't have no money for the door, but at least the venue makes some money.
Yeah, it's a hot party. They're
not going to kick us out the next week because we made some money. Sure enough, after that little, you know, marketing plan from DJ Enough.
DJ Enough, I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of these, I'm sorry to hit you guys with a lot of these kids today, but a lot of these kids today don't understand the importance of free shit to get things started.
Right, right.
Because you need people in the door to want other, so other people want to be there.
100%. So for this legendary party, my first club night, this is the people that are coming to my party. De La Soul, Nice and Smooth, Guru, and Premier. Wow.
Good thing you gave them free tickets.
Yo, Showbiz AG.
Wow.
Shabba Ranks. And the most memorable, probably Dougie Fresh, because he schooled me.
This is the first night, or just like around the beginning?
A little bit of everything, bro, because they all were online. They were all there. And I'm like, wow. Even Jessica and Flex and Red Alert, they all came to the party.
That's crazy.
It was amazing to me. This is my first club, bro.
Yeah. Were you the only DJ?
I was the guy.
You were the guy. You were prime time.
That's it. I was prime time. I opened, I did the middle, and I closed.
Do you remember?
I had 6-7 hour sets.
Jeez.
Remember, for $300.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you bring. Yeah, how many crates were you bringing to something like that?
At least 8. At least.
Who's carrying those crates?
Haitian Pat, who's Haitian downstairs. Pat, he's still with me.
Yo, Haitian Pat's day one like that.
I'm
going to be honest, I didn't know.
Haitian Pat went to high school with me.
Wow.
He doesn't remember, but me and him smoked weed together in 1983. I'll be telling him, he's like, I don't remember that, bro. I was a smoker. I was like, you're full of shit, bro. I remember.
I didn't know you. So for anyone listening, Haitian Pat is like a staple around because of Enough. He's always been around. He's a great guy.
He's the first Haitian we ever shouted out on the radio. Before the Fugees, before Wyclef, before Lauren, before Praz. Like, he was the first Haitian being shouted out on Kiss FM.
So Haitian Pat was helping you with the crates.
100%.
And do you remember some of the records that were super ringing off in your first club run?
Party Groove.
I was about to say, that's...
De La Soul Saturdays. Nice and Smooth, Hip Hop Junkies. Let me see. There's a few others.
Would set off a party.
There's a few others. Yeah, all that was a go at those parties. But
I'm gonna get about non hip hop records.
On the reggae tip was Beres Hammond.
Broadway.
Yeah, no. Whatever with Cudi Ranks and then the remix.
Were you playing? Those were big. Were you playing dance records too?
What about
Oh, D-Light, Groove is in the Heart.
D-Light.
Yeah, that kind of stuff was around a little bit.
A little bit, okay.
Yeah.
But it was mostly hip hop and dancehall.
It was mostly hip hop and dancehall, at least for us.
Okay. And so how
I played no Spanish music at all.
Sell out.
Definitely 100%. They would look at me like, yep, sold out. But it was just only hip hop and R&B. And I remember Dougie yelling at me like, why are you DJing like this? I'm like, what do you mean? He was like, you got to keep him up here and you got to bring him down here and then bring him back up here. And then he was telling me how to talk. I don't know. I might have been going too hard or whatever, but he was trying to teach me how to roller coaster party.
That's true art of DJing.
That's something I never knew about. No. Honestly, I learned it from, I think, you and Flex and Red Jessica at the Tunnel. The environment at the Tunnel was so dangerous that you had to play a certain way. You had to bring it down because it gets crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to bring it down just so.
You have to bring it down a little bit. Like, it gets too wild. And we want it to get wild. And then you come back down a little. You bring it back up.
Yeah.
Saif, you know one of my favorite stories that I love to tell on the podcast.
About your prostate exam?
What?
Sorry. Well, I don't know. Sorry. Which one are you talking about?
About Michael Jackson penis.
Oh, no.
That's not what I meant either. About when Tigger used to tell me. I remember I was interning for Tigger, and Tigger, I apologize to all of our listeners, who'd said he had just come back from a party in the South where he was DJing, and he played Make 'Em Say, they had to stop the party when Mystical's verse came on because they were about to throw someone off the balcony.
Oh my God.
Like, they had to
That's crazy. Yeah.
In the middle of that joint. So yeah, you have to learn as a DJ how to pace yourself. And you don't want to spend people either to the point where it's like people can only go so long. But you got to let people go get a drink.
But the crazy shit at the time, this is my first club. He's kind of sunning me and he is the greatest entertainer, right? So I'm over here like, initially, I'm like bummed. I'm like, damn, this fucking the world famous Dougie Fresh telling me what the fuck I'm doing wrong.
Yeah.
Like with my own set. So I'm like, here I'm thinking I'm finally making it. I'm no longer local. I'm in the city now. I'm in Times Square DJing. All the greatest of the greats are at my fucking party. And then Dougie Fresh comes and busts my bubble.
And you can't exactly go, well, what does he know? Yeah. He's literally the world's greatest entertainer.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, and there's a famous story where people don't talk about it because Dougie Fresh was telling Enough this, and Enough was like, oh, I. And then he was like,
ayo.
Oh, ayo, I. And he created the whole record.
And that was it. It happened right in that conversation.
He stole his record.
So how long did the Negril party run last?
It didn't last that long. Maybe about a year or so. You know, we were new. We didn't kind of really know what the fuck we were doing.
But it was on Video Music Box.
But it was definitely on Video Music Box. Yeah, because Tuffy used to
take the cameras there. Yeah.
So I don't know. I truly don't know the answer to this question. When did radio begin for DJ Enough?
Okay, so
I know this.
All right, so I'm DJing a club on 23rd Street and 11th Avenue. It's called Spodiotis. We're doing a party there, and then Red Alert comes to me, and Red Alert has his poo-poo juice in his hand, and he goes, hey, Enough, can I talk to you? I was like, yeah, what's up, Red? He goes, how would you like to join me on Kiss FM radio to help me out with some things?
That's crazy.
So I was like, ah, you're drunk, bro. Stop it.
Yeah.
I literally called him drunk and told him to leave me the fuck alone. I thought he was bugging.
Well, he had the poo-poo juice.
No, but I thought he was bugging.
I forgot about the poo-poo.
I thought he was bugging, okay? And then he says, no, I'm serious. So I was like, what? And then I got wind that Flex was leaving to start Hot 97.
Wait, Flex was under Red Alert.
Yes, Flex was Red Alert's apprentice first.
Right.
Wow.
So he's leaving Kiss FM to start Hot 97.
Yeah.
And we're all laughing at the time.
Of course.
Because Hot 97 is a dance station.
Right, good
and
luck.
And Funk is leaving the classic Kiss FM to fucking go start Hot 97.
And at this point, Kiss FM in hip-hop terms, we're now like in 91, 92. Kiss has already been a staple of hip hop radio for 5, 6, 7 years.
Easy, yeah.
Where it's been like you already had all this incredible shit and BLS. Easy. So it'd be one thing if Flex had said he was switching to BLS.
Right.
But no, we're gonna go start turning Hot 97.
No, he's going to the dance station.
Right, to the dance station.
At this point, Glenn Fisher's there, Scribble, I think I forgot who else is over there. I know Dennis is over there too.
Well,
at the Hot 97.
Baltazar.
Yeah, Baltazar. Kind of people. That's exactly what it was. And this is something that Flex never talks about.
Okay.
And I don't know why. Maybe he doesn't want to because he's not, whatever. But when he first started, all the whites in New York, the Guineas and all that, they were fucking calling the radio station and get this nigga music off the radio.
100%.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Our Italian producer from Staten Island now, nodding his head. No,
he's like, I called.
Now, this is the truth. This is the fucking truth.
His parents on the phone.
This is the truth. This is the truth. I don't know if it's just Staten Island or Bay Ridge or Bensonhurst, but those neighborhoods were not a fan of Funkmaster Flex taking over their dance station because Mamba. But that meant no more TKA. That meant no more Cover Girls. Any of that stuff.
So, wow, that's crazy.
It's a different time, bro.
How long did it take, in your eyes, for Hot 97 to actually start catching on and people thinking of it as like, let's turn on 97.1.
Oh, this is a thing?
Yeah.
Maybe a few months in. It wasn't that long.
It could have been too long.
Maybe a year, if that.
Okay.
And that, to me, was short time.
Yeah, it
because
is.
Because remember, format switch. Think about it. Funk is only doing Friday nights.
Sorry, Friday night street
show. And what, an hour? Maybe if that? And then it was 2 hours, and then it was 3 hours?
Was he coming on earlier than the normal rap shows?
That, I don't remember.
I think he came on like an hour early. Maybe to like get 11 the jump. Or something? Yeah, to get the jump on like Red Alert or whoever was on.
Maybe something like that.
BLS.
And okay, and at that point, so now you go with Red.
Right.
Of all the DJs that Red Alert knew and looked up to him,
right?
It's crazy. I always look at this like,
me too.
How did I get picked?
Me too, 100%.
You know how
many? You know what he said?
What?
I asked him the same question. Yo, why me?
Wait, you asked him then or years later?
No, then.
Okay.
Why me? He said he felt like I had the most head on, whatever.
Head on straight?
Yeah, my head was on straight. He was like, this is not the streets. I'm taking you to corporate America. You'll be able to handle yourself in the building properly.
You got to handle yourself in the daytime, talking to bosses and managers.
And that's what it was. 100%.
Yeah, man. But like, how many opportunities, like, you like, I still struggle with it to this day. Like, why me?
Yeah, I think that about you also. but it's interesting because both you and Flex know how to, and always have known how to, operate in the station, not just as DJs, but as business people and figureheads in the radio station.
Right.
And, we always get that. There's a lot of like, oh, why not this guy? Why not that guy? They were dope. They were great mixers.
They were dope.
Or every time Red saw them out, they were wasted.
Like the DJs, I thought had a shot at doing that was probably like a Kid Capri, Ron G, even DJ Ace at the time. There was a bunch of DJs who were just really on fire in their own right, whether it was mixtapes, clubs, or they had a little ins and outs on doing some mixes on radio, and you kind of heard that.
And it's interesting because Capri is you know, you can make an argument for him being the most notable DJ ever from New York.
I mean, 100%.
And he had his radio moments.
No, he was on fire on BLS.
When
he was on, bro, he ran the city.
No, but it was also... it was daily and it was early.
And he was only on for like 45 minutes or something like that.
Was it 7 o'clock?
Or half an hour. It was something like that.
6 o'clock maybe.
Yeah, maybe early, yeah.
So that changed the game.
No, it was crazy.
He would come on at, I think 6 o'clock. I don't think five. I think
he was on for half an hour.
Bro, it was like 40 minutes. It was like, right, as you know, radio terms, it was past where you think the commercial would go and it would be like a little bit longer. I worked at Chicken Choice in Wantagh, Long Island. And at 7 o'clock, I'd be like, hey, I'm going to go. I would make it my appointment to go to the back and clean the chickens.
Yeah,
I because I wanted to listen to Kid Capri for that. Because it was short. You could get like a whole set. And he rocked it.
No,
but he couldn't.
It.
But from what I know, what I've heard him say, he couldn't justify not going on the road to do this radio show for no money.
Oh, right.
Because he's like, now they're calling me to do this party. I got to go.
I got a boat party in Virginia.
He loved the actual art of DJing at clubs. And he was the first big DJ to get his own tour bus and kind of toured multiple tour buses at that.
Yeah, but radio at that time was probably like
no money. Yeah. It was everything.
Yeah, like because it's setting the culture, but it wasn't crazy money.
No.
I mean, he's probably getting a shift rate, you know, maybe, or whatever.
Yeah. We don't know what the deal was.
When were you on?
Okay, so there's these things called music conventions, right?
Of course.
The Gavin, the BRE, Jack the Rapper, How Can I Be Down?
How Can I Get Shot?
Every time those things went on, that was my time to shine.
Red would fill in.
Red would go and I'd fill in. And I'd be like, ooh. And the only thing that would be like, don't play Onyx, throw your guns in the air. And I'd be like, oh.
Damn, that's all I wanted to play.
That's what I wanted to play, the hottest record in the city. And I'd be like, why we can't play that? He goes, I have a child. And there's no way I could support rappers that support guns. God. Like, this is my early days of like listening to a parent. He's not Red Alert no more. He's like the parent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shoot.
And by the way, I understand where he's coming from.
No, I get it now.
It was a rock.
Why is your child up at midnight listening to the radio?
But at that time.
You need to fix your house.
No, but you see, that's me. Remember? I said 1 a.m, listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Right.
That's us.
Right.
So,
yeah. So they are going to find a way to hear.
100%.
I mean, I did go pick him up, bring him home dead.
Dead. Shine him up. Shine him up.
One gun.
On two guns. Three guns.
Four.
That's a lot of guns.
Yeah. Think about it. It's a lot of guns.
Wait, so you only filled in for Red Alert when he was away?
I was only filling for Red when I was away.
And what about regular? What were you doing regular weeks when he was there?
I was
carrying his crates? Were you like helping him out?
No, bro. I mean, the most I got to do is like, I set him up. I would go into the lockers and pull out these big cart machines. And on these carts were promos and drops. Okay, and then in between that, he would cut and scratch. And then,
You were there.
I was there.
When he was on.
Yeah.
So you didn't only just come in when he was away.
My into the building was I worked in the promo department driving a van. So I was a promo dude.
Really?
Working for Kiss, yeah. I worked in the van.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
me and
Big Henry Brown. We used to, and my man Kai and Kevin, those would have got the street team.
What about
And we had battles in the streets back in those days.
Yeah, like, the street team back
then. I would
then
pull up in the sound system and I'll drown the other radio station system.
You go up against BLS?
Yeah, easy. Like, poof, 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 with the van, because our van had a banging system. It did. And you would pull up, and then we'd like take down their poster boards or take down, or we'd do things in front of their, like, what are they called back then? In stores.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Oh, the in stores.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
In stores at Dr. J's, we pull up at Dr. J's.
Right, so all the stations are showing to the
yeah,
store.
Yeah, exactly. Just it'd be the funniest thing, but it'd be the best thing for the customers.
The fact that you were on the other side of it, like you were already in that building, must have felt like magic.
1440 Broadway was the address to Kiss FM, and it meant everything to me. Right across the street from Bryant Park.
Wow.
That's
how many years? How many years of Kiss?
Maybe early 90s, and then at 94, the lights went out.
94, and you went straight to Hot?
No.
Oh,
B-I-G. I went straight to Europe.
B.I.G.'s between.
I lost my job. I felt like Cypher when he left Hot.
He went Eat Pray. You went to Eat Pray Love in Europe?
Then, no, I'm going to tell you what happened. So on my last radio show, I get a fax. This is how old it was.
Okay, I love
a fax comes in. DJ Enough, would love to book you in Switzerland. Can you please call? And I don't know why I have this stupid accent, but.
It's Switzerland.
Anyway, so in my mind, now this is Brooklyn Enough before I had any education, right? And I'm like, yo, who the fuck listens to hip hop in Switzerland?
Yeah.
Right.
And this is me thinking, I'm thinking blonde hair, blue eyed chicks selling cheese, chocolate, and yogurt.
Yep.
You're not all and wrong.
Yeah.
But
it was, that for, was there.
Except they love hip hop.
But that's what it was. But then when I get there, it's nothing but Latins, Africans.
Yeah.
And I don't know what, maybe Dutch.
Like Middle Eastern.
Whatever
too,
they,
also,
yeah, it was just crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I meet this incredible DJ Cutkiller from Paris at my party. Me and him turned this party upside fucking down.
Okay.
For the next 12 years, I'm DJing every year in Paris with fucking DJ Cutkiller. It's crazy. That's when, what's his name, Jamal?
Yeah.
Jamal from Stress used to come, you know, because me and Cypher would part
is
of the
Jamal
same.
From Stress, you're Jamal?
Yeah.
That's how I met him.
Me and Cypher in the same fucking crew at the time. We're part of Flip Squad DJs, and I'm literally traveling in the world after I got my gig taken away from me. So I was like, fuck it. All right, I lost my radio shit. But I'm traveling the world now.
Damn, but you caught the right moment where like hip hop, because all those European guys were like either bootlegging.
They were popping though.
Radio tapes.
They were.
And they were fucking, people used to tape the radio and mail it to different countries, yo. Just tape the radio.
Listen, I go to a record store, you see Red Alert, Chuck Chill Out, Red Alert.
Yeah, just
Chuck,
hours
chill out,
of radio.
Red Alert, Chuck Chill Out.
Wow.
I'm like, yo, everything.
Yo, and so by the way, I asked Camilo earlier for things to ask
Yeah. Okay, he got some questions.
Camilo came through with two things that you just brought up. His first two questions. Number one, who were the Flip Squad DJs? Number two, did he live in France for a while?
Oh, shit.
So did you live in France at any point?
No, I just felt like I was there forever. I mean, I probably went there 15 times out of my career compared to like maybe 12 in Japan. Those are the two most visited countries I've ever been outside of the United States.
Yeah.
And Cut Killer was
the reason. And you went to Switzerland and you met Cut Killer. Yeah, and then so that became your French connection.
That was because of my French connection.
French connection.
Yeah. Wow. Are you guys close to this day?
Not close, but we still, you know, connect with each other. We just reconnected this last, over the winter. Yeah.
And so who were the Flip Squad DJs?
This is so weird.
Why?
Our lives are so similar because I have the same relationship with Tim Westwood.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, Spanish guys interning at a radio station, going to Europe with the biggest DJ. It's so weird.
Brother, you were DJing for Lil' Kim.
I know.
You did?
Of course you did.
Lil' Kim.
Oh, of course. My God.
He never told you that?
That's a joke. It's a joke.
Oh, you asshole.
It's a term.
He says it all the time.
Bro.
Oh, my God.
Bro.
But it was a big deal for us. It was a big deal for us.
It sets off the stories. But yo, this weekend, I was in Houston. This guy yells out from the crowd, "Did you have a DJ for Lil' Kim?" It's like a joke on our show. People are like, what the fuck is happening?
But no, I never put together until this very second. You were under flex, Puerto Rican dude, under flex, DJed for Kim, Puerto Rican dude, under red alert, yep, DJed for Biggie.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Like, I never put
that's
that
it.
Together.
That's it. That's it.
So funny.
So, okay. So we have to get to the Biggie part then. Mm-hmm. So you're doing these shows in Europe.
Wait, so Kiss FM, wait, why was it Lights Out? It was Lights Out for you?
Well, or? Because officially Hot 97 bought
Kiss FM. Oh, that's when they bought Kiss.
Right. So,
right.
So okay. They couldn't rehire us. They put a freeze on the Kiss FM manager review,
right,
part of it.
Right.
No hiring, okay, firing, or whatever. So then this is my last show. I'm DJing. I get the fax.
That's a crazy thing to get.
Yeah. So it's
the
amazing.
The fax on the last day.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it's almost like on your last podcast, you said, me, I wait till the next thing is, no, I wait till it's over until I go into the next thing. You said that on your podcast. So I was like, I was happy I didn't have to go through that process. It just naturally happened.
Who went with you to Switzerland?
That I don't remember. It's probably Jamal.
At that time?
Maybe at that time. Yeah. Well, maybe after that, but it was somebody like that. I don't think Pat went with me to that one.
That's your first time to Europe?
First time.
You had a passport already?
No, I had to get one.
You had to go get a passport.
I had to get everything ready, take the photo, get everything, fill out the applications, all that shit.
That's crazy.
And I remember getting stopped in Paris because I was making mixtapes back then. And I have all these mixtapes on me. And they're like, what is this? And I'm like, music, take it for free. No, not for sale. No, not for sale. Just take it. I think I gave half my cassette collection to the custom
Billy,
agents.
Billy, when the mic breaks on the guest, you jump in and fix
to
it.
To the custom agents in Paris.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And wait, how much would you sell them for in Europe?
I mean, it depends. You know, you go to a store, you take a bulk of them or just maybe take one as a master. It could be anywhere from $500 a pop to maybe $25-$30 a cassette.
That's pretty good.
Hey, it depends, yeah.
I can't believe how much mixtapes were sold for on the streets of New York. Yeah. Like Capri tapes.
And then they always ask me, hey, how come DJ Clue's not here? How come, you know, like I guess some of the DJs weren't making their rounds to Europe, but they were definitely in demand. Definitely.
You know
them
hood dudes.
I'm not going over there.
I ain't going over there.
They asked about Doo-Wop.
It's corny over there.
Yeah, I think Tony Touch, Red Alert, were the only regulars.
Like, Doo-Wop. He went.
No. I said Tony Touch.
Tony Touch. Yeah, Doo-Wop was like, but I'm watching the news right now, smoking weed.
They're like, no, we know. But
Jamal used to say, like, knock on Doo-Wop's door in the hotel. Yo, we gotta go. Hold on, I'm watching the news.
All right, so the Flip Squad DJs were.
Yeah, so tell us who they are and how they started.
I don't know about how they started, but Cypher Sounds.
I'm the last one.
Big Cap. DJ Riz. Frankie Cutlass, Budokan at one time,
Budokan.
Right from DC.
Mad Wayne,
rest in peace, Mad
Biz.
Wayne. Biz Markie.
What about 9MM?
No.
He wasn't a DJ.
And then in the very
His
end.
His name was DJ 9MM.
Not DJ 9MM, he was a rapper.
In the very end, I think we added Mark Ronson. In the very end. He was the end of
Mark
it.
Ronson, Mark Ronson, yeah.
Big Juan Epp listener. He's listening, so shout him out.
Shout to Mark.
Shout him out.
Yeah.
What up, Mark?
I see Mark at the Grammys. Yeah,
said Doo-Wop.
Doo-Wop too, yep.
Flex, Cap, Enough.
Biz,
Mad Wayne. Oh, yeah, maybe. I felt like there's more.
The only person that was missing kind of around us was maybe Love Buck Starsky. But he wasn't like an official member.
Right,
He was around them?
Jessica booked them a lot.
Wait, was Flip Squad all Jessica DJs?
Yes. Yeah, Jessica managed the Flip. She created it.
She created
with Flex.
Yeah.
They were DJ she managed.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's Flex's first iteration of a DJ crew.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before there were pit bulls and before digital DJs.
Before pit bull and digital DJs. That's why. So Heavy Hitters was created because DJ Enough never got an invite to be part of the famous pit bulls.
Well, hold on. Let's not get there yet.
But that's coming up next.
That's coming. All right,
cool. We'll talk about that.
Stay tuned. We got a lot.
We'll talk about that.
Because that's how we get there. All right. So you said that the Biggie part came between radio stations, right?
At this point, I'm doing the Hot 97 morning show with Miss Jones.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you how. It was Ed Lover, Miss Jones, Kurt Flirt, and Fat Man Scoop. We kind of was like, that was the next wave of the morning show. Star and Buck Wild was doing the 5 a.m.
right
stuff, the pre-morning show before the morning show. Yeah. And we had a Hot 97 thing yearly that we called the Players Ball. Remember that?
Yeah.
So I'm at the Players Ball, and then Puffy comes to me at the Players Ball because Mary J. Blige's My Life album is out that same weekend.
Okay.
He approaches me and says, "Hey, why don't you come on the road with Big?" So I'm looking at him.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm looking at him like.
That came through Puff?
Came through Puff.
Why you?
I don't know. Now, to keep in mind, Biggie only has Party and Bullshit out, maybe Juicy, maybe Unbelievable. That's it. He's
like
not the
R&B
super
remix. Yeah.
He's not the superstar king yet.
Right.
He's on his way. He has a big buzz.
The buzz is big, though.
He's big. I mean, he's big. Buzzing. But in my mind, I'm thinking I'm Hollywood. I'm the kid no longer local. I just got my shot. I'm on Kiss FM radio. I'm the fucking guy now. This is my shot. So I don't know if I want to work for the BIG yet. I don't know. I'm really thinking about it. And then I talked to a few heads. They're like, just do it. If you believe in him, you think he's... I said, I think he's dope. I think he has something.
But you already knew Puffy from doing parties and stuff.
I knew Puffy from parties. And Biggie I knew from... There was a party on 13th Street between Park and Broadway. It might have been Suede. But prior to Suede, it was the Pussycat Club or Cat Club, where the movie theater is at, right across the street.
No, I know I know Suede. I know
but before
Suede,
that, it was called the Pink Pussycat Club or something like that. It was a predominantly white party that were playing soulful music at the time. And it wasn't like Soul Kitchen or like that, but it was very similar to it. And Biggie was trying to get into the party. And he didn't have no ends, him and M.O.P. I'm the DJ who has the connect and the plug. I know the guys. I know the promo dudes.
Let's go to the white party.
I'm like, yo, my man, this guy's Biggie Smalls. He just got signed to Puff's new label. He's at Uptown MCA. And I remember specifically saying Uptown MCA.
Yeah, of course.
Right? This is before Arista, before Bad Boy. Yeah. This is Uptown MCA. And I was like, I promise he's not going to start no shit. He's a good guy. He just wants to come and have a good time. This is some good music. So I co-signed him, and he just loved me from that day on.
Dude, what about the other two guys? Right? Those guys might kill you.
Who, the M.O.P. dudes?
Yeah, fame and dance.
I'm not too sure about those guys, but it was like a Carl Kanai hoodie fest. It was like Brooklyn is coming into thing.
Fame that told him about Pop from the barbershop.
Is that who he's talking about? He says that?
Yes.
Talking about Fame? Yeah.
Him and Fame were like this. Yeah.
They were that close?
Yes, sir.
Fame and Biggie was super close with the Smith & Wesson guy.
Tech. Oh, wow.
They're all tight.
Yeah.
So you get them into the club, and that was how you got to know Biggie.
It's just love.
And then
I met him prior because me and Cap DJed Biggie's single release party for Party and Bullshit. Mm. And that was through Jessica Rosenblum also. And then I got the cassette from Big at the party.
Which cassette?
This Ready to Die. Yo, this is my album. I need you to do whatever you want with it and let everybody know it's coming.
That's crazy.
You know what I do?
What'd you do?
I go to Kiss FM radio and I get that bitch cleaned up and we play it on the radio.
Wow.
And then the warm line. Doo, 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 doo. I'm like, oh shit, the warm line. And then I'm like, I'm not paying no mind. Then the hotline. Doo, 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 doo. I'm like, oh shit, I got to pick that up. It could be the boss. I pick it up. It's Puffy. What the fuck are you doing? Playing my B.I.G. shit, nigga. I'll fucking kill you.
It sounds like Puff.
So I'm like, now this is early DJ Enough who doesn't understand a marketing plan or a single rollout, whatever monies you put into laying out your shit, the merchant.
Yeah, apparently Biggie didn't understand that either.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he didn't. And he didn't give a fuck. Biggie was just happy to, his album was complete. Here, take my shit. I love you. Have a great time with it, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And this is why it's baffling to me, because you said, out of all the DJs, why you, right? Yeah. Why did Puffy come to me after he cursed me out?
Right.
So I'm thinking, I don't have no relationship with Puff. This guy hates me right now. And then a couple of weeks later, the same guy who hates me asks me to become Big's DJ and go on a road with him.
So you decided to do it?
I decided to do it. First show, Washington, D.C.
Let's go.
Jesus Christ.
what venue, remember?
I don't know. Hotel.
Wait, how was the rehearsal?
No rehearsal.
I know.
No fucking rehearsal.
Never.
None.
Never.
No rehearsal.
How was the meeting? How was the big meeting where you broke everything
the
down?
Nothing. Was in nothing. The white passenger nothing. Van.
It was a white piece of paper, and they wrote the songs, and they gave you the paper, and that's it. That was my whatever. I think I might have talked to Clark Kent because Clark Kent was the DJ prior.
Wait, so why did they move on from Clark Kent then?
Because Clark Kent was very busy, and he started to become the A&R guru. And he was producing records. Right.
But he had Jay-Z signed too. He started being A&R.
Then he was doing shit at East West.
Right.
He just came out of doing Original Flavor, a bunch of shit. He was busy.
So first gig is at a hotel in D.C.
Yeah. Shootout. Pa, 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 pa.
Come on.
Outside before the show. Not at the show.
Did the show
outside.
Happen still?
The show still happened. But I'm like, what the fuck? So I'm on my way to the show. I'm carrying vinyl, a vinyl bag. And I take the wrong two copies of Roger and Zap, Computer Love, because I need it for me and my bitch when I'm cutting.
You were already doing, you guys already, you guys did the, that was always from the beginning, that was early on.
Yeah, because remember I told you, I learned from Clark. Clark had some dope remixes of Biggie's performances before anybody came to do any remixes. And it was like, you know, like the Al B. Shore sample into, was it One More Chance? Like, there was a bunch of versions that he had that I was like, yo, I need that, bro. He never gave them to me, but it was just amazing how he just, so the Computer Love was a thing. And I remember having that on album only.
Oh, no, you had to play it off the full album?
So I had to play it off the full Greatest Hits album. And it was horrible because it's like low quality. If you know about albums, y'all,
yeah, you don't albums, play
are,
off an album.
Albums are on low quality. And
low
it was
volume.
Like,
Oh, you could, and you can't miss that. You can't miss that scratch.
You got to be.
Or you'll end up like Big Cat that's having it. Biggie throw shit.
Oh
at
man,
you.
That was the worst, bro. That
we'll
was
get
the
there.
Worst.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll talk about that.
Okay,
too.
So you do the DC show. Do you remember what? So it was all just the early album stuff.
Yes, sir.
The album was out. No, the album wasn't even out yet.
No, the album was out already.
Okay. By the time you got on the road.
On the road, Unbelievable was out. Juicy was out. I think One More Chance was just on the buzz.
So he's buzzing,
and then. Around, yeah, I got to see Big Papa become the new single.
Right.
By the time Big Papa dropped, that's when the world, to me, fully came to like, Biggie's here.
Yeah.
Because, remember, this is like, I don't know if the beef started, but it was the Biggie and the Pac shit.
Well, it started because Who Shot You's on the single for Big Papa.
It was happening. And I remember specifically us going to like certain neighborhoods, especially like Detroit, mad Tupac fans in Detroit. And it's like, you know, like you perform and it's like the twos are up everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, we're performing, getting money. People are throwing quarters at us. It's just weird. It's just weird. The vibe is just weird. Because Pac, I don't care what nobody says, Pac fans were cult Pac fans. Like it was a whole different kind of fan shit.
Yeah, that's not the Biggie fan shit.
No.
It wasn't cultish.
It's a whole
different
thing.
He was just so
thing.
Cool. Like everyone just fucking loved
Biggie
him.
Biggie was party time.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, nah, he might be your favorite, but it wasn't cult-like.
Pac fans were a different kind of breed.
Yeah.
They were almost like football fans.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like he was their team. Like,
yeah, 100%.
You just mentioned the Big Papa single.
Yes, sir.
So obviously, and you said that stuff was already getting weird with Tupac.
Yes, sir.
Were you around for Who Shot You?
Yes.
For the recording?
No.
Because I remember, do you remember the first version I heard of it was on a nasty bootleg and it didn't have any of the As We Proceed, any of the Puff.
Nothing. Really?
Yeah.
I never heard that.
Oh, it's just nasty.
I don't remember that.
Really? It's literally just the dun-dun. It just sounded like the De La shit. You remember how De La used it first?
Yeah.
It sounded much more like that. No Puffy, very basic. And then by the time it came out for real on single, it obviously had a bigger impact. Like, did you know at the time that was going to be a big deal? Who Shot You? It was just like, this is a B-side underground.
That's it.
Yeah. Some street shit.
Wait, did you hang with Biggie besides shows?
A little bit. Not a
not
lot.
Much, right?
Not a lot. Because I didn't like hanging out with the
Mafia?
Mafia.
No, not that. It wasn't them. It was just like, yeah, I remember, look, the Brooklyn that I remember back in those days was a rougher, harder Brooklyn. And it wasn't always safe to be out by itself. You know,
did you ever go to the studio with Big?
Yeah. The only sessions I saw was I was at Daddy's house when he was recording Play a Hater, when he performed More Money, More Problems.
That's a good one to be here. That's kind of historic.
Yo, but the crazy thing is when I heard More Money, More Problems being chopped, I was like, this is horrible. You know, in my mind. But then when you hear the song done, you're like, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But when I heard it for the first time, I'm like, this is fucking weird. This is not going to win.
Yeah.
But it actually went.
I can see that. Wait, and What about, wait, didn't you do Get Money too? You
did no,
Get
Money Remix? I did Get Money Remix.
Well, don't poo-poo that. I would say the Get
I'm
Money.
I'm not going to poo-poo it.
Okay, good. The Get Money Remix is almost as big as Get Money Original.
I mean, my point was, it pushed it to platinum status. I know that for sure. Yes, 100%.
My point was that I don't know if you guys know this. I used to DJ for Lil' Kim.
Wow.
Junior Mafia.
Amazing.
But I never got invited to anything outside a show.
Because you're
never?
A loser.
I'm a loser, right? No, I definitely was way more raucousy underground than Enough. Enough was cool.
He definitely was.
Like when Enough got down with Biggie, and he was from Brooklyn, so he was already in the Brooklyn club, and he was way cooler.
Well, and by the way, he was having a drink, smoking cigarettes. Cyphe was doing nothing.
I was a fucking loser.
Cyphe was a fucking square.
But I never got invited. Like I remember we would do a show, and then they were gonna go shoot the Crush on You video. And I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna get to go to my plane ticket.
That was at Esso's.
You were there?
No.
You weren't a Crush on You either?
I went, but I wasn't in video, but I was there.
It was just to invite me, you just look around,
you'd be a, then before you know, you're like, you know what, I'm in the way. Let me get the fuck out of here.
This is really interesting because let's just be real. Everyone loves to talk about the DJ's the backbone. In a lot of situations, the DJ for the artist is an annoying, shitty, overlooked, unglorious.
It is.
Yo, you could be
a DJ. Oh, you're on the road with Lil' Kim.
Exactly. No, you could be DJing right now. There's someone out there who's DJing for one of the biggest artists in the world right now. No one knows who the fuck he is. No one cares. He has to carry the equipment. Oh, he has to make sure when you
don't
leave,
care.
Your own team's leaving without you.
Dog, I remember being in Virginia. It was a fucking all-out brawl, a big fight.
They left
me with two turntables, a mixer, four crates of records by myself.
Yep. I've been there.
By myself, bro. So I'm packing up while everybody's throwing haymakers and fighting and knives are being pulled and bottles are being broken. And I'm by myself packing up. Little old me. It's crazy.
Did you give, when Quiz went out with G-Eazy, did you give him any advice?
Yeah, I said, don't do it. But then he did it. But he did it.
He did it.
Nah, you got, why would you say don't do it?
I mean, it was just at the time. I mean, but, you know, I didn't know.
He ended up getting a good run out of it.
No, he got a great run out of it. And then he actually toured the whole entire world.
Yeah, he's done the whole world.
No, that's a whole different thing, man.
But, you know, we know all the downsides to it. But as a young DJ, it's so fun.
Yeah, but you know what? You're not realizing that you're making history while you're going through the history.
Of course.
You're not. You're just living it. You're living your everyday life.
Yeah.
But you're not realizing that you're making history.
How did Get Money Remix come about then?
Me and my man Jiv. Jiv was from 39th and Glenwood. Jiv. Jiv used to also DJ for Lil' Kim too, after Cypher.
Wow, really?
After? Yeah, I think after. Or maybe before. Either or.
No, after. I was first.
He was wrong.
As soon as she did her solo out of Junior Mafia, I was first. Yes,
he was there too. And I remember Biggie used to clown me. Like, oh, where are you doing a show for Junior Mafia? And you think that's going to go well?
Wait, hold on.
He would clown us.
Wait, why? But it's his crew.
I know, but it don't make a difference. It's like,
wait, hold on.
When Kim and C's would reach out to me, we got a little show or something.
Without Big. And they would ask
and
you to
Big
do
would
DJ.
Laugh like, oh, you think that's going to work out? And I'm like, I remember doing my first show with them. We're in Miami somewhere. And it was literally like Kim and Lil C's hiding underneath the tables.
Oh, I heard about that.
And it wasn't.
Wait, why? Why were they hiding?
Though we're not in Miami. Like,
yeah, we're in
like the hood of Miami. This is not the Miami Beach that everyone knows. And
right. This isn't glorious. This like is glamorous.
Not. No. We're in the hood, and they didn't want to hear anything except the hits. But they only had one hit. They had only Get Money.
No, two.
Two. Players anthem. Yeah, that's it. But it wasn't enough to. To fulfill a whole show.
Yeah.
And how long were you slated to do? Like 30 minutes?
At least half an hour to 45 minutes. You know, so you're there trying to do that with two songs. It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
It's very rough.
By the way, artists, if any artists are listening, that's a note to you. If you have one song to play, don't agree to 30-minute sets.
Yeah. I did it.
What do you mean?
I did it with Nina Sky, bro. We made a fucking...
How'd you do it?
We would just do covers.
But you guys were also creative, and that's where your DJ input.
Yeah, and it was also not... It was two girls singing. It wasn't like grimy hip-hop.
Right.
Yeah. It's a little easier, but you can make it work. You do a little DJ shit. You do some crowd participation
a cover,
shit.
A cover of something they know.
Cover something. 100%.
But Kim and C's weren't doing that.
Not yet.
You did the whole Biggie run.
Right.
Then he puts out Junior Mafia.
Right.
no one even really realized there was a difference. It was just another Biggie song with Kim and C's on it. So that's Player's Anthem and then Get Money, which is crazy big.
Right.
Get Money. I remember but the first this time.
Is, so I'm going to tell you the real...
But was Biggie doing Junior Mafia shows?
He a little bit here and there. The ones that he wanted to do. Unless there was a good bag or whatever. Like he took them to... Went to Amsterdam and Rotterdam with Junior Mafia.
Yeah.
That I remember. And then
and he went.
Yeah. The headliners were Coolio and Method Man. We were openers for them.
That's crazy.
And I remember specifically like Meth and Coolio getting 45, 35 G's. I think we were probably only getting like 5 or 10 racks back then.
Wow.
It's just crazy the way the world turned. And then years later, Biggie ended up becoming the big guy.
What do you think Biggie's biggest bag ever was performing?
I know.
You know?
Can it be more than 50?
Why?
Because I remember being with C's when right before Life After Death came out. And he was like, yo, we got this whole idea, right? We're going to do this show. Who was the choreographer? The big, that had the TV show later on. She was like, Leslie
not,
or?
Debbie Allen.
No.
You talking about Tanisha?
No, not her. Before her. Leslie
was part of
There's another famous choreographer. Anyway, whatever. Okay. She was helping Biggie do choreography, but not dancing. Like, to help him work. Like, when the song starts, you're on this part of the stage, and when you get to your verse, you're on this part. She was putting the show together, right? And then C's was like, yo, we rehearsing, and we gonna try to get, like, we gonna get, like, 70,000. Right? And at the time, I was like, 70,000? Like, now rappers get 70,000 in a club, right? Like, certain rappers, like the Migos, could get 70,000 on a walkthrough. But back then, like he said, he's like Big's number. We're going to get, like, 70.
Right, which means before that, the highest had to be 50.
So he never,
like
they never got 70.
And
they
never
got killed.
And Big got killed before.
But he was like, the number, I remember it was like 70. And I was like, that's amazing. That's fire. Because I remember Kim sometimes would get like 30. And I was like, oh my God. That's
and how much would you get? How much you get?
Huh? Well, like 1%. But she was getting 30 sometimes. And that was huge.
Okay, so we got distracted. So Get Money comes out. Gets huge.
You know how it starts? So the hottest mixtapes were popping in our vehicle all the time. If I didn't have a mixtape available, we went to this, whatever was cracking. And Doo-Wop 95. Live Part 2 was out, and somebody was rapping on Dennis Edwards.
Oh, yes. Don't Look Any Further.
Don't Look Any Further.
So who rapped on it?
I forgot, but Biggie heard it.
I think it was like, Keith Murray talking about Foxy Brown giving him head.
Something, but it was just amazing. And then Big was like, yo, E, you think you could flip that? I said, of course. Ooh, let's flip that. So then we flipped it, and they came out to Get Money remix.
How long between he asked you that and before they recorded it?
Maybe a weekend.
That's crazy.
That's how thirsty we were. And then we were recording at Hit Factory back then.
But you so did it with,
we did it
with Jiv Pass.
Yes, me and Jiv.
I remember he
went to the basement, went to Jiv.
Jiv's basement.
And we started chopping up Dennis Edwards so much because back in those producer days, we weren't trying to jack records. We were trying to flip them, right? And then Biggie was like, nah, man, we're not doing that. I said, what do you mean? Remember, he's Puff's guy. So yeah. Puff's used to jacking everything, right?
Say Jackie.
He goes, dog, we're going to have to clear the sample anyway.
Right.
So just take the shit. So then it went from the echoes and the chopping to just give me a couple of good loops and a couple of bridges.
And put the dope drums to it, though.
That's it.
Yeah. And when you hear it, I'm playing it right now if you guys want to hear it. And when you hear it, you didn't do that much.
No, not much. We just add some shakers to it, and that's it. But the only thing with that I would have done differently to this day, I added too much filter on the process.
You added too much filter?
Yeah.
Wait, what was filtered?
Like you hear that background, it's like muffled. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, the bass line.
Yeah. So when you hear it in a big sound system, it sounds very bassy and woofy. And I would have changed some of the 808s too.
Who made the genius decision to leave in this initial ad lib for when he starts the... that shit. This is what makes the song to me. Here we go.
Oh!
I just want everybody to know I'm proud to admit who I am as a human being. I never heard this song on God's green earth until Get Money remix.
Really?
Never.
Oh yeah, we have this long. We have many discussions about he doesn't know about like black barbecue music.
Yeah, no? I don't know, you know that. What I mean?
He don't know those songs. He didn't know Juicy.
But he's from Maryland. They got that over there.
Yeah, he wasn't hanging out with them.
See the difference? They see how heavy it sounds?
Yeah. Yeah, but E, this was a banger, though.
And the best part to me at the time, because I'm working at the radio station, when he goes, I'm Hot 97, Rob, I'm ready. I'm like, yes. I'm like, yes.
Were you there when he recorded it?
No.
Oh, a story just came out recently.
Yeah.
C's was on Math Hoffa.
What they were saying.
And he was talking about how Big wrote the rhymes for C's, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
C's says he didn't rap. And Biggie, but he was saying how much like Biggie like looked out for him.
Yeah.
He stood in the studio 4 hours writing his 100%, verse.
100%.
C's verse.
He really killed this too.
And a bottle of Dom P. A peeping on me is Brooklyn in the house without a doubt. I'm the rapper with clout, everybody rap about. Guns, I bust them. Problem with my wife, don't discuss them. Coops and lead jets, I lust them.
Woo! Woo!
Pissy mattress. It's okay. Not here. Hot 97, Ron ready.
I love how fucked up the line is. I didn't even dawn on me till recently how fucked up it is that he says, it's okay, she was old anyway.
Yeah, it's okay. She's like,
I had to kill her, but don't worry, she's old. It didn't even matter. So can you like visualize and actually picture him doing that record? Like you remember the actual obsession?
I remember that. It was a lot of food, weed everywhere.
Everyone said that. Was it really a party a lot when you did shit?
Yeah, but think about it.
Girls around too?
Look who his friend is, or his crew is. It's Junior Mafia. So he's always with the Mafia.
Yep.
And then you got Wayne Barrow, Mark Pitts, those guys.
Would Puff be around or no?
Puff would pop in once in a while.
How often was Puff around generally?
Only for the big stuff. You know, that was the other parties to break my heart. So I tour around the whole entire world with B.I.G., and then when we come back to do our New York shows, he take me off the bill and put Clark Kent in.
And we're the same guy.
And I'd be pissed as hell.
Yo, we would come back to New York shows and they would get Clark to do them.
Yeah.
And we're like, I was just with you in fucking scumbag Mississippi and I don't get to do the New York shows?
Yeah, it was
fuck
crazy.
Fuck that, man.
Yo, you guys both had the exact same shit. And it was Clark for both of you?
Remember,
so, because it was Puff. Look,
Clark was the bigger DJ. Now at this point, I'm clear.
Yes.
But back then, living through it, I was pissed.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, yo, I went through shootouts with these guys.
Right.
I went through fist fights and fights and we missing flights and tour buses and the tour bus breaking down and people died that year. Like, and I can't do the Apollo show? Are you kidding me?
I can't do the Apollo.
It was like, what the fuck?
Did you do the show in the movie The Show?
No, that was Clark. Let me go. It's Clark Kent one time.
Oh, I forgot. And he gets the ad on it. And that ends up on the soundtrack, too.
On the show soundtrack. When I met you.
Yeah. Were you tight about that?
No.
That one would have gotten me tight.
I wasn't tight
about
that.
But not doing the New York shows.
Because that was done way before I was even around.
Oh, really?
That was way,
that was just when Clark was still DJing for him.
Yeah, 100%.
So you and Big didn't like hang out socially a lot.
Not much.
But it was,
he was a kid. Right? Big was way younger than you, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Junior Mafia, like...
Big was like 3-4 years younger than me.
C's was like 7 years younger than you.
How do you like think of your relationship with him?
I think from a professional standpoint, it was incredible. Because I know I wasn't there for him all the time because we alternated as disc jockeys during that era. Like there would be some weeks Cap would go and some weeks I would go.
Yeah.
So I was double booked on two tours. I was on the show tour with Def Jam. And then I was on Biggie's tours, you know, so I kind of rotated back and forth with those tours.
Who was on the show tour?
It was Foxy Brown.
Keith Murray.
Jimmy Henchman. Yeah, Jimmy Henchman. And he had a Bulletproof Love record with some girl named, is it Shanice?
I didn't even know Jimmy Henchman had records.
Yeah. Well, he had a label or something. It was Ghostface, Raekwon.
Onyx.
Some of the Onyx guys were on there. Who else?
So was it
Meth and Red?
That makes sense.
Meth and Red, and I'm missing somebody else.
But is there any worse?
You were the DJ for the tour.
For the tour,
not for each artist.
No, I was just like the DJ. DJ enough who would just be doing his thing between
right,
that.
Go between, yeah.
Is there any worse sound? Is it, you guys might totally disagree, and knowing Sypho, I'll be like, I like that version better. But for me, is there anything worse than when you're going through your Serato? Sypho never happened. Also, he's too organized. And you hit How High, and it's the regular version.
Bro, Doo-Wop.
You probably love the original version.
Only because I saw Doo-Wop play it, not by mistake. Like, he played the regular one, and it hit.
It hit.
And I was like, Oh shit! Like
it's it does
like
hit for street. Some people.
Yeah, I mean this is a long time ago, but yeah.
Because that Fly Robin Fly was
that
like
no, that's fire. Yeah, that's fire. It was.
So you said professionally you consider it great.
Yeah, because I remember I told you we went back and forth on these different tours, and then it was a few weeks I wasn't on the road with him, and I came back to New York to go to a vibe party. He's at this vibe party, so B.I.G. in his Dip silks and Versace clothes and gaiters, whatever he just happens to have on, gets on his hands and knees at the vibe party, begging for me to go back on the road with him. So I felt like, oh, I'm the man.
Oh no, but Liz, but
wait, hold on. Like, he literally did it. Like he put on a show for you. Like he really wanted you.
Yes. Like brother, please, you got to come back on the road with me, please.
But were you not on the road with him?
No, I wasn't on the road with him at the time. I was kind of like on and off. I was like,
Are you able to really process even now, all these years later, because it was your life, that literally the most important, I would say the most important figure maybe ever in hip hop, jokingly got on his hands and knees to beg you to go. Like that would be like someone having a story of like Elvis got down and begged me to be play lead guitar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Fucking but insane.
But Big Cap was not a good DJ. As far as
do you have the word respectfully?
You know what it is? No. Big Cap was a great DJ.
I didn't finish my sentence.
Yeah, go ahead. Go back. Go ahead.
For being an artist DJ to be like organized and fucking.
He wasn't a technical DJ.
Party DJ, he would rock because he knew all the records to play. Even though they were scratched up,
he had a voice. He had a voice too.
His voice was great. If you don't know what we're talking about, there's a video of Biggie doing like a summer jam in like the Bay Area. And Cap's records kept
skipping.
By the way, it was hot. The record was melting. Weren't the records melting?
Yes, but also he did not keep good care of his records.
Right. He never put his records back in his sleeve. He
just have a pile like this of non-covered records.
I'm going to tell you one thing. I believe, and I'm guessing, but I believe Syfe, Enough, and myself all have in common as DJs.
We're clean.
We're not shoving records not in a jacket properly.
No,
like my records are going in the white sleeve.
Me too.
I'm not sticking them. People would take doubles and stick them both outside the white sleeve.
No.
You're getting, if I stick two records in one jacket, they're both in the white sleeve.
In between. I'll do one in between.
You would do between?
I would just stick
both white sleeves in the one jacket.
That's crazy.
Because I wanted the white sleeve to protect it. Because otherwise, you're on stage and it's skipping, and now Biggie's throwing shit at you. Biggie's getting the crowd to boo you.
Yeah.
Yo, do you guys know Cap actually tight about that, or was it just part of their relationship?
I don't know. I think they left him in the airport on purpose one time.
Oh yeah, they did leave him in the airport. Yeah, but he didn't care. He's Cap. He smoked weed.
So Biggie was a bit of a prankster, also.
100%
shit talker, prankster, fucking with you.
100%
Did you ever get fucked with on the road?
One time.
What happened?
Cleveland, Ohio. We do a show at the water. There's a marina. Boats pull up at the show, and I do Who Shot You or some other record skips.
Okay.
At this time, I'm doing the show only on vinyl.
You would get test presses of the album
instrumentals? No, we just had instrumentals.
But album instrumentals?
The stuff was out. Yeah.
So you have
singles.
The stuff was out. These were the singles.
All singles.
Yeah, there was no special versions.
But anyway, the stage was made of these cubes. It wasn't like a straight up stage. And the cubes were supposed to be so that if something was bouncing or uneasy, it wouldn't give vibration to the turntables or the wire setup. Biggie was 500 plus, okay? When he walked on the stage, he shook the stage. But I'm the disc jockey. Biggie can't get blamed for the fucking music getting skipped. I'm responsible for that. So he told me, if I don't get my shit together, he's docking me $500 every time from my pay. So I'm like, oh, shit. And that was the way he did it. The first time he did it was on stage. Like, you know, like the crowd is booing and they were like, boo that motherfucker. That's the reason why.
So you got the exact same treatment that Cap got.
A little bit.
At least
once. But one time and one time only. It never, after that, I Clark Kent taught me a trick. He said, pre-record the show on DAT and just have it. So if you're ever in a sticky situation, just play the DAT.
So if the setup is one that you know is going to be skippy.
Yes. Look, brother, I didn't have the instant replay machine out at the time.
Right.
They had it, but I wasn't bringing it out at the time. CDJs were available, but I didn't have no CDJ controller.
So a skip is a skip. You're fucked. That's it.
Serato wasn't out then.
Wait, but I love this idea, though, that Biggie gets on stage. He's the reason it skips. And you have to get booed by the crowd.
And I got to get booed by the crowd.
Yo, everybody say, fuck the DJ. And I was like, I came with you. I'm not some local guy you just picked up at the airport. Wait, enough. What's the story of some kind of beef or a shootout or something? And then did you lose your passport?
Okay, we had a big fight somewhere. I forgot what city. We all lost our passports. Mm. And I know this for a fact because the lawyers had contacted us.
Right, right. That's how they found
you. They were trying to get us to pay some money or something, or they were trying to sue us, but I ain't paying no mind. Then they
stopped. You lost your passport, so did you have to rent a car or drive out or something?
No, I lost my passport, and we were domestically in the States, so it wasn't
that's how they found you for the lawsuit.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a real dilemma right now, and I need your feedback, Scythe. We're currently 23 minutes away from the hard time that you guys said you had to go.
Yes, sir.
23 minutes.
I know what you're going to say.
Do we just say we are definitely going to do this again and like set a date in a couple of weeks?
Whatever you want. I'm down.
Mind you, anytime we've ever said we're going to do part two,
we've never done it.
So it's like to be continued and then the show just gets canceled.
I'm very professional, bro.
I know you are.
Is that your fault?
Are you having fun? Would you want to do this more?
100%.
So if we said literally we're going to do this again in 2 weeks,
I'm down.
And pick it back up, on a Friday, maybe again.
I'm down.
Because here's the thing. I want to get back to those flex stories and the pit bulls.
Yeah, there's so many.
And we haven't mentioned the name Kanye West has not come up
yet. We're still in 95. Yeah. We're still in 95. Bro, I remember I'm not going to tell you right now. I'll tell you part two. When Tracy came in to flex his show and I was there and she said she wanted to hire DJ Enough.
I know that story. And then she asked if you guys knew me.
And then I remember going to a party. I came through the DJ Riz camp and then I was Funk Flex Big Cap World, which two very different styles of DJing. And I went to a party on 14th
Street.
14th.
Yes, sir.
And I went and I saw DJ Enough.
14th and 9th.
Yes. And I heard Enough play and I was like, what is this? What style is this? And then the most important thing about it was he was having so much fun. Riz, I don't think Riz smiled ever. I never saw Riz smile in my life. Riz is AI before AI.
Yeah.
Riz is a fucking DJ robot that every second of every beat of every was on point. And then Cap was just sloppy, but fire for the streets. And Flex was like, Flex taught me how to turn the lights of the DJ booth onto your face because you have to be seen, right? So it's a different stuff. But Enough was rocking and having so much fun. Throw some salsa on, throw some house.
And by the way, Enough is a super, for anyone listening not from New York, Enough is a super fucking clean DJ.
Clean.
Too. It's clean.
Thank you, guys.
Every DJ has a signature scratch. Like you have a signature with your name. I can tell who's DJing by the scratches.
The cuts and scratches. That's dope.
When I used to fill in for Flex, I mastered copying his scratches. So people didn't know it was me.
Oh, really? I used to copy Flex and Scratches because everything I did was copying Flex. I didn't know what else to do except to copy Funkmaster Flex. All right. We talked about Get Money Remix. Mm-hmm. You also did your Nobody Till Somebody Kills You originally.
Yes, sir.
You don't have the credit on the album, though, right?
Yeah, well, I do.
You do have full credit?
Yes, sir.
Co-producer.
Yeah.
With Puff?
Yes. And Stevie J.
And Stevie
and
J.
And Derek D. Angeletti. And Faith Evans, myself, and Jiv. That's the way it went back in the days. If you wanted to be on the album, if you didn't take it, then they would leave it. That's
so
the way it was.
Really did the record hands-on? You and Jiv?
Me and Jiv, 100%.
No, the version they did, I remember I went to Jiv's.
Oh, because there's an original. Yeah, there's original, two. There's both mixes.
There's original.
I went to Jiv's.
There's original Billy Preston sample. And I think at the time, Billy wanted more than, I think the Biggie Estate was willing to.
Cough up?
Yep. So then I think D-Dot and Stevie J and them replayed everything, which just bended the rules a little bit, gave it a different sound, but still ended up.
It's still generally the same song?
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah.
Scythe, you were saying?
No, I went to Jiv's studio. Jiv, actually, now I'm thinking about Jiv taught me a lot how to use the MPC. Like when I wanted to learn how to produce, he was like, come to the crib and I'll show you how to do it. And then he played me that beat. But it was like way harder than the one.
It was very sad. I'm a big hearing name. It was like, you hear how sad that sounds? I was like, I love this.
That's crazy.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
He was like, Enough. We're going to make some money together. I'm ready. And I was like, yes, I'm going to win. And then he dies.
Yeah, he fucking dies.
Destroys my.
Were you gonna DJ for him for the second album?
Supposed to be, yeah.
Wow.
They talked about like us wearing suits and then him coming out of a coffin.
That's what I'm telling you. That's what the lady who's choreographing it. Choreographing it. That's right.
So, there you go.
I got it.
They were talking about all that stuff way in advance. Yeah.
So how fucked up were you off of his death?
I almost quit everything. I was literally in the handball courts where I grew up in Brooklyn, smoking weed, drinking beer, like 11 a.m. in the morning, just sitting there doing nothing and blaming it all on hip hop. You know what I mean? Right. Instead of life, but just blaming it all on hip hop. I wanted no parts of it. I was just tired.
What a weird experience to mourn the death of someone you know, mm-hmm. as the entire world is mourning the death of who to them is essentially just a celebrity. Was that a weird experience? Because everyone's talking about it, but you're like, no, that's my man.
It's nuts because I remember telling D-Rock, I was like, D-Rock, please take care of him. Because the death threats were real. All that stuff that you hear in the documentaries and all the tales. People calling up and hanging up. And that stuff was real.
Really?
Yeah, so because that stuff was happening on a regular basis.
Wait, that's what the skit on the album is like. Yeah. Somebody calling and saying, I'm going to kill you, but he made it funny.
Yes, 100%. But I told D-Rock, yo, please take care of him. And I remember them saying, yo, we're going out to L.A. I'm like, no, man, how is this a good idea? 6 months ago, a year ago, Pac died. And they're still blaming you for that. Why would you want to go to L.A. and party? Puff was like, you know what? We got the Soul Train Awards. We're finishing the album. We're just going to go out there and party and just celebrate the album being done.
Well, and Big had obviously already done going back to Cali. Right. So he clearly had the mindset of
course,
like,
he loves Cali.
I'm moving past this. I'm going to have fun out there.
100%.
He obviously had some faith that it would be okay. That 100%. People would just fuck with him and it would be okay.
A lot of people fucked with
and
him.
People
in
did,
LA too.
For the most part. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's a rough one, man.
Yeah, so I decided to stay back and for a good reason. I think, because what if that was me in the car next to them? You know, we never know what.
So you really didn't go out of worry? Like, it just doesn't make sense to go.
No, I didn't go. It made no sense.
First, I don't know if you guys know this. I used to DJ for Little Kim. Okay. The first time happened? I went to LA was with Kim. We weren't allowed to do nothing. We went for an MTV thing, right? Yes, we landed. There was like security, not hood niggas, like real professional security. And we went to the hotel across from the Fat Burger that Biggie talks about in the song. I want a square to take it to Fat Burger. And then, so we're in the hotel for like 3 days and they do not go outside. They don't step outside. So I was like, I wasn't in Junior Mafia back then. No one knows who I am. So I just like walked around the hotel by myself. I was like, I'm in Los Angeles, Hollywood. And just walked around. But they had mad girls come to the hotel because I was like, how the hell do you know all these girls? And like, yo, we used to be out here all the time. We love LA. All that shit that happened was fucked up.
Where were you during the funeral?
I was there.
Were you like all together? Were you like with the music?
I went there.
With Junior Mafia? And
I think me and Angie Martinez went together, if I'm not mistaken, yes. They asked us to carry his coffin out, but I missed that. I think it was like Lance on Rivera's and his brothers, and most of them kind of like went out to carry the coffin.
To be pallbearers. On my list of questions, mm-hmm. As we head towards the end of part one with DJ Enough, the first time there will ever be a part two, Cass One said, ask him the story of when he quit Star and Buck Wild.
Star was very controlling at the time and he was trying to control what I was playing and I wasn't really happy about that. So I just got up and said, I'm out of here. Fuck this. I quit. And I just left the building, went downstairs.
Mid-show.
Yeah. Walk out the building, had my book bag on. And then Tracy Clority, the Ice Queen, ran downstairs, met me in the street. Where you going? I quit. Fuck this. I'm not doing it. I'm not listening to him. Whatever. She said, I need you. You crazy? You're one of my best DJs. So it was the first time I felt important at Hot 97. Like, for real, for real. Because
I never felt that.
Because...
What about when security was escorting you out?
No, but sometimes you don't really know your worth. You know what I'm saying? And then
you can't see yourself the way the outside sees you.
No, yeah. So then for the big boss to be like, you're not going nowhere. You're not whatever. And she just, I don't know, she fixed it. And then she worked it out and she just moved me.
Just moved you to another slot. But that's, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people who take those chances to know their worth or to play, leverage some shit.
Right.
But we're humble guys. Like, we're like, man, fuck this. I just want to play music. I'm a hip hop DJ. Fuck this. And then you leave, but then it gets shown to you. Mm-hmm. That's a good moment, man. Right.
Yeah.
That's a good moment when they go, no, we need you. You're valuable.
Yeah.
All right. So at this juncture.
All right. We got nothing. There's so much more.
We've gotten a lot. No, because the Biggie part I knew was going to be very lofty. Like, okay. It's sort of, by the way, how often do people mention Biggie to you? Is it every day?
All the time.
Every day?
All the time. I think it's probably the most, besides Hot 97, it's the other thing I'm probably most notarized for or known for. Wow. Yes, sir.
So on the flip side, as we preview, and by the way enough, I want to make one request of you. When this episode drops and everyone's going, wow, DJ Enough's amazing. Don't do any other podcast interviews till we do part two. That's all I ask. All right.
I'm down with that.
So a couple of weeks. Just give us a couple of weeks. All right. Because we got to, I was going to say right now, like, I'm sure most people ask you about Biggie. Mm-hmm. What I don't think people realize is that Heavy Hitters logo that's on the Kanye's first album.
Yes, sir.
You know, and how close that relationship was.
Oh, Kanye used to beg me to be down with me.
Preview of the next episode. Here's a preview, mm-hmm. preview question. Wait,
hold on. Next time on One Ep is Life.
DJ Enough.
Yes, sir.
Were you shocked? Because we were very surprised that you weren't in the Genius Doc. Were you surprised that the Heavy Hitters were not in there at all?
Yeah, but I don't know the guys who were doing it.
Cootie and Cheeky.
I know Cootie and them now, but I didn't at the time.
So you didn't see the cameras that much?
No,
then?
No.
Wow.
No.
It just happened to be.
It just happened to be. I mean, I think one of his album release parties, I think he was there. I think when his mom was there or something. I might have seen that. That's it. I was at a few spots where I was in the building, but they just get me on camera. That's all.
And because I remember after it came out, like Syfe said and Ebro, everyone mentioned to me, Kanye was around Hot 97 a lot.
All the time.
Cameras weren't there, but he was there a lot.
All the time. All the time.
So we'll get into all of that next. And all your other amazing connections and production credits. And there's so much to do. And how you ended up with the Heavy Hitters because.
Yes, because you were Flex, not asked because to Flex be, shitted on me and it didn't make me a big dog pit bull.
Syfe? What say you?
I wasn't good enough to be down with Cypher and Riz and them. I was tight. You know, he had DJ Premier. Everybody was down. Yeah, Premier was a pit dog pit bull for a quick second.
Premier was?
Yeah.
No, but Enough's definitely skipping a part of the story.
Well, hold on. Everyone.
Next time on One Ep is Life.
Enough. We can't thank you enough, dude.
No problem.
Really. 100%. And your patience in dealing with our first day in the new studio. Appreciate you.
I'm here, man. You guys are doing great
work. Love you, E. Love you. The great DJ Enough. Catch Cypher Sounds. We'll be at the Ha Ha Hole in Toledo. See you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.